This is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network, bringing you all Noles all the time.
In Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to the basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting rolled banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something, I can really do this.
This is Jason Staples, and you are listening to the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network. Got a big show today. This is Georgia Tech Week, facing Paul Johnson's offense. Always a task, this time in Atlanta, where Florida State lost in heartbreaking fashion the last time. Yes, I know. I'm sorry to remind you, to remind all of you Florida State fans on that. But today we're going to be looking at the Paul Johnson offense, what makes that offense so difficult to defend. And then secondly, we're going to look at what key matchups Florida State's going to need to win in order to have success in this game. So let's go ahead and get started. The first thing anybody ever wants to talk about when they talk about Georgia Tech football is Georgia Tech's unique for Power 5 football offense. And essentially, Florida State hasn't seen an offense exactly like this since Georgia Tech last year. And most teams will not see, most Power 5 teams don't see an offense like this unless they play a service academy or Georgia Tech. It's a unique thing. But it isn't entirely unique in terms of, you know, option football has come back in college football. I mean, when you're playing a spread option team, you're playing a lot of the same concepts that you're playing against with Paul Johnson. And actually, the flexbone, which is what Paul Johnson runs, is a spread option. And I know a lot of people out there really don't quite understand this, but Georgia Tech runs a spread. They generally are in what is effectively a four wide receiver or a four guys in quick release to wide receiver type routes formations. That's one of the benefits of the flexbone. And before we get any further in this, I'm going to take a moment to talk about sort of the philosophy of how the, or a little bit of history of how this came about. The flexbone itself actually came from Fisher DeBerry and some of that, back in the day. Fisher DeBerry was at Air Force. Now, Fisher DeBerry's philosophy on how to run the flexbone is actually quite significantly different in some regards from Paul Johnson's. But the overall concept of the formation and some of the things that we see in what makes it a flexbone does go back to DeBerry and some of those guys. Essentially, what the flexbone is it takes the wishbone, and you know, most of the listeners on this show will know what the wishbone formation was. What the wishbone is you've got three running backs in the backfield. You have a fullback who's lined up, 3 or 4 yards behind the quarterback, and then you have two halfbacks who are lined up in the backfield, another yard or two, about a yard and a half, 2 yards behind that fullback on each side. So it's kind of like a pro formation where you have split backs, but you have a fullback up a little bit between those guys directly behind the quarterback and the quarterback under center. Now that wishbone was something that Oklahoma rode to a lot of success in the middle part of the 20th century. It was option football at its core, but it did have some weaknesses that ultimately, as teams found ways to stack the box and to use gap sound principles and things like that, there were ways of limiting the flexbone, particularly once teams started to get the wishbone. Once teams started to get faster, get more speed on the field, and you could beat those teams to the edge. And it was a little bit more difficult to just run the football, run the option on teams. So what eventually a few coaches did, and again, DeBerry is one of the godfathers of this, is they took those halfbacks and they moved them into a slot back role. So instead of having them in the backfield, 7 yards deep, 6-7 yards deep, what they did is they put them up on the line of scrimmage. They left the fullback where he was, or maybe moved him back a yard, depends, but usually left the fullback basically where he was. And then they took those halfbacks and they took them from being halfbacks and put them up in the slot, which put them on the line of scrimmage, which effectively makes a four wide receiver type formation. Now, they're not wide receivers, they're slot backs. or what Paul Johnson calls A-backs, as opposed to the fullback, which is the B-back. What those A-backs are is they're your speed guys. They're guys that are going to get to the edge. They're what used to be the halfback in that offense. But by putting them on the line of scrimmage, what you've done is you've effectively found a way to spread the defense out a little bit, and you've also got the ability to threaten the defense with four receivers who can get vertical in the passing game immediately. On the snap of the football, you've got four players who can immediately get vertical. When you had guys in the backfield with the old wishbone, you didn't have that. You only had two guys on the line of scrimmage who could get vertical in the passing game. So if you had good corners and a decent safety, you could defend that with three and sometimes even two guys. Against the flex bone, the problem is if you did that, they can go four verticals and then you can hit seams in a three deep or something like that very quickly. So now you have to match up with those guys in the vertical passing game in a way that you don't against a more traditional option attack. So that's where this is actually a spread formation. They run a spread formation as their base. Now, what happens is in the flex bone, they use a lot of what's called orbit motion, where one of the A-backs at the snap is going to take is going to go in motion backwards and around the fullback before the snap. And then the snap will be timed so that as that player is moving into the back further into the backfield, the ball can be snapped, and then you can have the option go one way or the other, and that player ends up being the third option in a triple option look. So if you run a standard veer, then you have, you know, the B-back is your first option. You're reading one player on the offensive line or on the defensive line, and then you move along. And if you don't give there, then the quarterback is going to read the next man on the defensive line or the end man on the line of scrimmage. And that A-back who is in the backfield as a result of that motion is going to be the guy that's going to get the ball. And what that motion does is it effectively puts him in the same kind of position relative to the quarterback that he would have been in had he been a halfback in the old wishbone formation. So what the flex bone effectively does is it gives the advantages of the old wishbone in terms of the option and in terms of some of the threats that can give you in terms of getting numbers on the perimeter and some of the angles that you can get on defenses to get vertical seams in the running game while also not having the weakness of the wishbone and providing the strengths of a spread formation in getting players vertical, getting players out into pass routes more quickly as a result of having four guys on the line of scrimmage when you first line up. So that's the basic philosophy that Paul Johnson is bringing here, and it's why Georgia Tech is so dang hard to defend. Because you can't just say, oh, well, it's option football. We just defend it like the wishbone. Well, if you do that, then they're going to torch you by throwing vertical, by releasing four guys into the pattern very quickly, little play action, and all of a sudden you've got a guy running free. I mean, how many times do you see highlights of Georgia Tech where either in the run or the pass, but generally speaking in the pass, you have a guy running with no one around him for 25 yards with the football because he got released into the pattern and somebody missed an assignment and he got a straight vertical route right up the seam and nobody's there. So that's what makes this so difficult. You can't just commit players to the run because they will burn you with the pass generally. Now, I said in the preseason, and it turned out to be true, that Georgia Tech would have some trouble this year, that they would not be the same team as last year, that they would take a pretty significant step back. Now, I didn't expect them to have five losses at this point in the season. I thought they would be at best an 8-4 team. I thought they'd probably end up maybe 8-4, maybe 7-5 area. I thought 8-4 was probably best case scenario for them. And now they're not going to even hit that. And it doesn't look like they'll even hit 7-5. I'm not even sure they're going to make a bowl at this point. I mean, if they don't beat Florida State this week, they're going to have to beat Georgia at the end of the year to make a bowl, and they're going to have to beat Miami. They're going to have to win out, and that's including Miami and Georgia to make a bowl. So they're going to have some difficulty moving forward, even more than I expected. But I expected them to have some difficulty in part because they had to replace so much on offense. Last year, they had two wide receivers who were giants. big, big guys, talking about, you know, 6'3", 6'4", guys, 220, who could block you on the edge. It was like having an extra tight end out there on the edge, blocking your corners. So they could get that additional edge pressure. And also guys who ran. I mean, these guys are in the NFL. They're big time wide receivers that gave Justin Thomas that extra ability to have that vertical threat. He could just throw the football up and those guys would generally go up and get it. And they don't have either of those guys this year. They also lost all of their A-backs and their B-back from last year. And then to make matters worse, and this is what's sort of led to more struggles this year, they lost a few more A-backs to injury in the preseason. And then on top of that, and this is the thing that I didn't even think about all that much in the offseason, because you don't spend a lot of time. The flex bone, generally, one of the benefits of the option stuff is you don't have to have dominant linemen to be successful. But you need to be able to stalemate at least. But because you're getting to the second level so much and because you're optioning guys so much, you don't generally need to have dominant offensive linemen. So I didn't spend a whole lot of time thinking about, you know, their loss of all ACC guard, Shaq Mason. The thing that stuck out to me, though, watching Georgia Tech so far this year has been how badly they've been getting beat on the offensive interior. They can't block good defensive tackles. Now, they played a lot of them. You know, Notre Dame has a couple really good defensive tackles. I mean, that's a really good defense, Notre Dame is. Clemson has one of the best defenses in the country and a couple quality defensive tackles. You know, Duke has a quality defense. UNC, even though they're not all that good on defense, they've got a couple decent defensive tackles. But they're not great defensive tackles. But when I went through and I was looking at how Georgia Tech has done so far this year, those defensive tackles have been able to control the line of scrimmage on the interior. Teams could not do that with Georgia Tech last year. Shaq Mason on the inside was such a mauler that he could one-on-one block just about any defensive tackle and get at worst a stalemate, which meant that Georgia Tech could run the dive quite a bit and have success with the dive and midline option and that stuff in between the tackles, in between the guards, because teams were having trouble clogging up the middle with their defensive tackles. And if you're going to defend the option, you've got to defend inside out. Because the option relies on keeping that threat so that you have to commit three or four players to stopping the inside run, which then reduces how many players you can get on the outside. And the goal is to flank you. The goal is to get you to where you don't have somebody there. Ultimately, you wind up one player short of what you need to stop a vertical or to stand in a vertical seam, and you got a guy running free. So, you know, and the basics of this, you know, for Paul Johnson's system, the standard way of doing this, the easiest way to explain it is that his offense basically boils down to an if-then decision tree. And some option offensive coordinators who follow the Paul Johnson philosophy on this actually have an if-then sheet with them on the sideline. Johnson doesn't need a sheet because, I mean, at this point, it's all in his head. He understands everything. I mean, it's all there. But it basically works like this. So if the defense starts to overflow from the backside to get leverage on the front side, so based on the motion, if they're starting to overflow to the side, you give the motion, then you run the reverse pitch off the triple option. So the quarterback fakes to the B back and then flicks it out the opposite side. Now you have effectively a reverse, but it's faster. If the offense leaves it, if the defense leaves a bubble in the A gap in terms of the A gap is the gap between the center and the guard. If the defense puts the defensive tackle head up with the guard or outside the guard, then Georgia Tech's going to run what's called the midline option. And midline is a terrifying series, basically. The midline means that they're going to release that guard. He's not even going to try to block the defensive tackle. And instead of optioning the end man on the line of scrimmage, the quarterback's going to option the defensive tackle, and he's going to tuck it up inside if that defensive tackle tackles the B-back, that dive back, then the quarterback will keep it and tuck it into where that defensive tackle was positioned. And now the guard's on top of the linebacker who the tackle's supposed to be protecting, and you've got a vertical seam straight up the middle. So if you've got, you know, a two or a three technique, so if you don't cover that A gap, then they'll run midline. So that means you need to cover those A gaps with your defensive tackles. If you're then you've got another if the linebackers are flowing fast another one. If a team adjusts to take away the midline by using the outside linebacker reading the play side slot back, then Georgia Tech is going to have a counter to that. But we're just getting started. I mean, this is infuriating, but we're just getting started. If the defense responds to the threat of the midline by putting both defensive tackles inside the A gaps, then Georgia Tech is going to run the standard triple option, putting the dive back in the B gap. If the defense tries to squeeze that by having the perimeter defender squat on the pitch, then what they're going to do is they're going to run what's called a rocket sweep, where that's the one where you see that orbit motion come in and the quarterback just tosses it outside really quickly, and they're going to get outside the end man on the line of scrimmage right away because he's squatting on the inside option. And I know this is not necessarily the best radio to try to explain all of this without imagery. I'm going to have an article up on Noel Digest here in the next day or so to explain some of this with video footage to work on how this goes. But basically, the beauty of the Paul Johnson system is that offense has a simple answer for any possible formation or response the defense might take to what they're doing. And if Johnson has a quarterback who knows the if-then system and can read and adjust at the line of scrimmage, the offense should never be wrong. It's always going to be running something that the defense is not designed to stop. That's what makes the Paul Johnson offense terrifying to play against if you're a defensive coordinator. It's so simple, but they have an easy answer for anything possible that the defense can do in terms of X's and O's. No matter what, that's the beauty of option football if you're on offense. No matter what, you have an answer for everything they can present, and no matter what, the defense is going to be wrong. Because you always have the option to do something else if the defense does this. That's the game. That's how things work in option football. Now, in the second section, we're going to talk about how to defend the option. And we're going to talk about some of those key matchups that Florida State needs to win if they're going to beat Georgia Tech in this game. Once again, you're listening to the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio. This is Jason Staples. And now we're going to go ahead and talk about how to stop the triple option. Now, in the first segment, we talked about how it's pretty much impossible to stop the triple option when it's running well. When you've got something like what Paul Johnson's doing with the triple option, it's impossible to stop. If they've got the personnel to beat your personnel or to match up even with your personnel, you're not going to stop it. You can try to slow it down. You can do whatever. Bottom line, whenever you're playing an option team, and this is true not just with option teams, but with, you know, football in general, the answer always starts with personnel. If you've got better players than the other team, chances are you've got a good shot at actually beating that other team. That's what this is going to boil down to. If you're going to stop what Georgia Tech's doing on offense, you've got to have terrific athletes who can beat blocks and tackle in space. You've got to have better athletes on defense than they have on offense. You've got to have guys who can do more than one thing. Particularly, one of the issues that the option forces you to do, and I didn't cover in the first segment, sometimes the option will stick two guys through one gap. So you think about what makes the midline option series that I talked about in that first segment so difficult to defend is most modern defenses play one gap defenses, or even when they're in two gap defenses, you've got a player who's responsible for a gap. Defensive responsibilities are broken down by gap. And that works pretty well. You have this gap. Don't let anybody get through it. But the problem is when you've got an option team like Georgia Tech that sends, say, the B-back through the B-gap, and the defensive tackle is responsible for the B-gap, so he takes the B-back, and then the quarterback follows through with the ball. Well, now the guy who is responsible for the B-gap is on the ground with the guy that he tackled, but now you've got somebody else that's running through the B-gap. Who's responsible for that now? That's when you hear about people talking about assignment football and how option football forces you to play assignment football. That's what they're talking about. I mean, in every defense, you have assignments, but it's gap sound. Your assignments are gaps against the running game. In the option, that gets complicated because you have a gap, but you also have responsibilities on top of that that, okay, you're going to have first guy through this gap, and then if they go through that gap, then you're going to have second guy through that gap. What that means is some players are going to actually have to be responsible for more than one thing. And that's what the option does, is it puts you in a bind. It may be a safety who's responsible for the vertical route or for running the alley and keeping the quarterback from being able to turn up the field or keeping the running back from being able to turn up the field if the quarterback pitches. He may be responsible for both a vertical route and the running back. Well, that puts you in a bind because if you read wrong, then you have a vertical route running free, or you've got a running back getting a pitch in the backfield with nobody responsible for him. So you've got to have guys who are actually able in some way to do two things at once. And that's really tricky. And generally speaking, the best way, the most proven way to stop the option, what you have to do is you have to defend the option inside out. The reason for that is the longer the offense is going horizontally, the more you can have guys getting up off the ground because they're going to get cut, they're going to get guys blocking them or whatever. You're going to have guys be able to pursue horizontally and potentially get into position to limit how much upfield they can get. So you want to stop them from getting upfield, from getting north and south as much as possible and force them to go horizontal, which means you've got to have your defensive tackles. And I think the key to this matchup for Florida State is their defensive tackles, who've played well so far this year, need to dominate. What I saw as I've said, what I saw in earlier games with Georgia Tech is they struggled with decent defensive tackles inside. Florida State defensive tackles have played well so far this year. Nile Lawrence-Stample, Derek Noddy, DeMarcus Christmas, Derek Mitchell, those guys have to play very good games, and it's going to have to be despite all the cut blocking and all the things that you know you're going to see against Georgia Tech. And every team cut blocks, by the way, particularly Florida State cut blocks on the backside of the zone quite a bit. You're going to see cuts, but those guys, your defensive tackles have to win their matchups against their guards, and also, preferably, if able, and what makes this difficult is Georgia Tech uses wider offensive line splits than most teams. But if you can prevent that extra guy, maybe the center, from getting upfield and getting on a linebacker, that's another bonus. But the defensive linemen, those defensive tackles, have to win their matchups against the offensive guards to force Georgia Tech to run outside. Ideally, if you can stop the dive back, if you can stop the threat of the dive with just your defensive tackles, then you've got a great start to actually stop the option at that point. If you can stop that inside run, which, you know, they've got three guys on the inside and you've got two, with two guys, now you have an extra player, and that eliminates the option's advantage in terms of numbers. So that's the key matchup defensively. And I think we'll see Florida State be able to do that to some degree with their defensive tackles, just because of what I've seen so far on tape, where you can't get stronger in 2 or 3 weeks. You're not going to get physically better in 2 or 3 weeks during the season if you're Georgia Tech's offensive guards. And as of right now, I just don't think they're physical enough to match up with what Florida State has on the defensive front at the defensive tackle position. So I think they're going to have some trouble running inside against Florida State. And that's step number one. But that has to happen. If Georgia Tech's able to run that dive and able to run midline and some of those things and force them to put 3 and 4 guys responsible for that dive, that's bad news for Florida State. But what you want to do with those defensive tackles is have those defensive tackles essentially create traffic, create piles on the line of scrimmage with their size, force them wide. Don't give defensive linemen free release to the second level. Keep things clogged, force everything outside. And based on what we saw last year, I think we'll see the same basic thing again this year. Florida State is going to keep their middle linebacker. It's probably going to be Reggie Northrop in this game, like it was last year. Deeper than usual. You have him like 8 yards off the ball, and you keep him clean. He's almost a safety. He doesn't have an immediate responsibility. His job is going to be to scrape laterally against the traditional triple option or to clean up anything on the midline if a guy actually gets the ball. So if we do see, say, a midline option or, you know, Justin Thomas squirt through that line, that's going to be Northrop or whoever that middle linebacker's responsibility is. I think that's basically what we'll see. Now, you know, we'll see Georgia Tech try to respond by sending crackback blocks inside, things like that. They're gonna basically try to do what they can to get that guy out of position. But that's the other guy that's going to be important is that middle linebacker spot. He essentially winds up having to do double duty in terms of stopping. He's the safety for that inside run. Don't let that guy get to the secondary. And then he's also got to make sure that he cleans anything up on the outside. He's just going to scrape. Now, what's interesting is what North Carolina did with Gene Chizik, what they did this year, because they were able to win the matchup on the inside with their defensive tackles, they then put their outside linebackers, which for Florida State would be one backer and then probably Derwin James in the star role there, who, you know, that's who I expect to see in the star role in this game because of his size and ability to play in the box. Had them lined up basically behind the defensive ends and gave them double duty to take care of the B gap, the gap between the center and the tackle. And then if it was a quick rocket sweep or something, they had that responsibility as well. So it was almost a dual read responsibility for those linebacker positions. But that because they were able to bottle things up with their defensive tackles inside, they were able to release those guys just a little bit. And it'll be interesting to see if Florida State's able to do that in this game. And again, that's a key matchup to see whether or not Florida State's star and Will linebacker are, again, able to keep things clean on that outside in terms of being able to pursue to the pitch man, these other things. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see whether Florida State does some of those same things that Chizik did. I expect to see them do some of that. They did basically the same concept last year, but they had more guys on the line of scrimmage and not quite as stacked as what we saw. I think with what Carolina was able to do out of that stacked alignment, I wouldn't be surprised to see some of that in this game. That said, I really do. I just keep coming back when it comes down to it in this game. To the fact that Georgia Tech can't really threaten Florida State upfield like they could last year, particularly with the way that Marquez White and Jalen Ramsey have been playing on the outside. And Jalen Ramsey at the boundary corner against an option team is a big deal because option teams love to run to the boundary on that stuff. And if you don't have a physical guy that can take care of that edge, you know, that isn't going to get mashed by one of their big wide receivers on the outside, you could potentially give up some plays. But Jalen Ramsey is not the guy you want to run against. He's not the guy you want to test his physicality in this. So that's going to be an interesting development. I think Florida State will be able to single cover those wide receivers when they want to. So that's one thing I keep coming back to. And the other thing I keep coming back to is Florida State, I think, just has a decided edge on the interior in this game. It was not as true last year because of Shaq Mason and because of Florida State's injuries and youth on that defensive line. But I think Florida State's size is going to be the big issue on this, and the ability to win the line of scrimmage with those defensive tackles. And I think Georgia Tech will probably have some difficulty moving the football in this game as a result. All right, that's going to do it for us today. Now, before we get out of here, just a reminder that you can follow me on Twitter at Doc Staples, and you can, of course, follow Seminole Sports Radio at Seminoles Radio for the latest on FSU sports. Be sure to check some of my stuff. I've got some extra stuff over at NoleDigest.com. on Georgia Tech this week, some video material and a little bit of an article, sort of a recycle from some stuff that I've done on the Flexbone in the past, but you'll want to take a look at it. Make sure to take a look at that over at NoleDigest.com. Be sure to catch our next podcast, which will come tomorrow, which will feature my predictions and projections, a little bit more on the offensive side of the ball and what I actually expect to see happen in this game. So don't miss that. Also, a reminder that if you are enjoying this podcast, please be sure to subscribe on iTunes. Go ahead and download Seminole Sports Radio's free iOS app. That's a great way to listen to this show. And tell a friend. The more listeners we have, the more content that we can push to you. So definitely get the word out with friends and on social media. I'm Jason Staples, and this has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio of eSporto Channel. Thanks for listening.
I made this.